Instructional Designers in Offices Drinking Coffee is brought to you by Domino, makers of Domino One, the cloud-based authoring tool for e-learning. Learn how your team can work together better at domino.com. That's DOMINKNOW.com. Now, here's this week's episode.
And there it is. Which instrument do you listen to most in the theme song? That's a good poll. I kind of dig the walking bass line myself. It's Wednesday, everybody. How's it going? Oh, shoot. The B volume is set really low.
Whoa. It's more like be quiet.
Wow. That was harsh. Hope everybody woke up on that.
Yanked it out.
Somebody pulled the plug. There's always got to be one glitch after Devlearn, right?
I was just getting set for the accordion solo, and then you just like blanked us out on
it. Oh, I'm sorry, man.
Sorry. Sad face.
Oh, bummer. Look at all that weather in the chat, Chris. Man, we got people giving reports from all over. We have fantastic folks from all over the globe, as usual.
Yeah, sounds like it's a good day in Chicago. Let's face it, it's a good day everywhere. It ought to be, anyway. However, the weather may or may not be good for you, right? Let's make sure that we're not confusing weather with, you know, the fact that, oh, we get to be here.
We do get to be here. It's Wednesday, and we can make your day better by just being here.
Well, that's a lot. I'm not going to lie, that's...
Is that too much pressure? Well, quick, Chris, let's take the pressure off us. Who's our guest today?
Righto. Anyway, folks, we have Joe Cook with us. Joe's been with us a few times previously, but in case it's your first time meeting Joe here on Idiotic with us, Joe, introduce yourself to our gang here.
Oh, introduce myself. Well, it's lovely to be back. There's so many fabulous names that I recognize and so many fabulous names I do not recognize, but hope to recognize in the future. I'm in the UK. So as Andrew says, it is not great. It is cold and gray. There is no surprise there. You're absolutely right, Andrew. And what I've been doing for the last nearly 10 years is running Lightbulb Moment. And that's all about virtual design, virtual delivery. It's all live online stuff. And I've been working in learning and development for 25 years for CNN, Time Warner, Turner Broadcasting, that whole big kind of company. Also further in higher education, the charity sector. I will not bore you with all of that. Hello, Jennifer. And what I've been doing recently, which is why I'm here, is talking and researching about stuff that's virtual and hybrid, but actual research, not just what I think, obviously is really important, but what other people think and analysing it and all sorts of stuff. And so the other person that's with me today that is not on screen, because I like to hog all the limelight myself, is my business partner and brother, Mike. He is in the chat. You can say hello to him and he will share all sorts of links and I get to order him around. So things like... Please share the link to our website so people know where to find us, which he will happily do right now. So that's what I'm here to do today.
Very cool.
It's more like magic, right? Like you could just have skipped telling people Mike was there and you could have just done like, I'm going to go ahead and put my link in the chat.
Yeah, I just need like Lightbulb Magic as the account name instead of his name. If we get rid of him completely, that would just, you know, make it much better, make it look like a full name.
He could just be sipping daiquiris on the beach.
Yeah, well, then I'd be with him, but that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah. Well, let's see. So we're here today to discuss the results of a research project that you and Jane Daly have been doing. Yeah. And you did start this out, and we talked a bit about this last year, sort of the initial phase of this research. And before I forget, I will toss in a link to last year's episode if anybody ever wants to go back. I'm going to throw that in there. to the chat in case anybody wants to go revisit that after we're done here. See, compare and contrast. There will be a quiz after, you know, and we'll ask you to compose a small essay. Not you, Joe, other people, you know. Anyway. So, what's new? Tell us first of all, I guess, what the basis, you know, the research project it was about, what you've been looking at and how you've been doing it and those sorts of things. And
absolutely. So as you said, it's with Jane Daly, it's two of us, and she brought all of her research and analysis and behavioral science stuff to this report. And obviously, I could not have done this without her. And obviously, I'm bringing all of the virtual and hybrid stuff. And, you know, there's a crossover of experience, of course. But that's kind of where that came from. Now, in terms of, like, you know, why have we done this? Well, what we've been looking at is we thought that, you know, since COVID, obviously, the entire world went virtual. And whilst there's some research out there, we didn't think that there was enough to tell us about what people liked, what people wanted from their virtual and hybrid offerings, what they needed, how they were reacting to things. And we know that, you know, asking people what they want isn't always the best thing. It's just like, well, I want chocolate and daiquiris. However, I know I need exercise and fruit. So, you know, we know that there's a crossing point here. But what people are interested in and what they need is really important. We also wanted to help facilitators, designers, managers, stakeholders, senior decision makers, because this isn't just what do I design in my session and what do I do? This goes all the way up to the chain to what is the corporate culture or the culture in your organization. And why us? Well, as I said, it's about the experience that we both bring to this. And that is the lovely Jane there, the picture. And there's more about us in the report as well. So that's kind of why we did it and why we looked at this topic in particular. And obviously hybrid has exploded as everybody's starting going back to conferences, back to work and so on.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, let's talk about that next square in your display here. Who did you talk to gather this info then?
Yeah. So we put out a really big survey, and I say really big. It was, you know, detailed. It had lots of questions in it, but hopefully it wasn't too onerous. And what we have in terms of people responding, we had nearly 200 respondents, which is absolutely brilliant. Because Jane and I are UK based, unsurprisingly, most people that responded were in the UK. We did have a US respondent, but also we had people from around other countries as well. And there was a really broad spectrum of ages, of types of work, types of organization. There were some peaks and troughs in there, as you can see on this information. But actually what you've got here is, I think it's really important because you could look at this and go, oh, well, there's kind of nothing interesting here. It's like lots of different organization, lots of sizes, so what? But the way that I look at this is, well, it doesn't matter if I'm in a small or large organization, charity or corporate, whether I'm a young or old person, whether I'm senior or not senior, there's stuff I can take from this that's actually a universal challenge. And therefore, there are some universal solutions to this as well.
Very cool. Very cool. So was there, first off, anything that really surprised you in the results that you guys had?
That is a really good question. I think a couple of the things that surprised me, and they weren't massive surprises, but it's always interesting what people actually tell you. So we split the report into kind of three main areas, one of which is the learner perspective. And I think one of the things that came through really strongly is we asked people, right, when you're attending a virtual classroom, what is it that you want to attend? What kind of live online learning? And most of the people here responded in that big purple section at the top, said, I want it facilitated and I want a small virtual classroom where there's up to 10 people. But then we asked organizations, well, how many people do you normally have on your virtual sessions? They go, well, up to 15 people. And actually a really small number said below 10 and so on. So that was a real disparity to me. of people kind of going, we want small groups, and then organizations going, we want big groups.
And did you have any insight from the research, the survey, et cetera, as to why people felt they preferred small groups versus a larger group?
Yeah, some of the things that we thought, now this isn't kind of a direct answer to your question, but I think we can have an inference from this. So one of the things that we asked is about people's the impact on their well-being of attending these virtual and hybrid sessions. And 57% of the people that responded said, virtual sessions make me feel tired. And I'm a facilitator, and they make me feel tired. Get it. But you can also see here, these are other kind of things. We get frustrated with tech issues. It's hard to concentrate, and so on. And I think if we look at this from the point of view of what people like and what they don't like, then it's easy to understand, well, why are you tired? Why can't you concentrate? And so if in that left-hand section, people are saying, well, we've got other attendees that don't know how to use the platform. The connectivity doesn't work. Sound doesn't work. My facilitator hasn't designed the session specifically for Zoom, Teams, whatever. The facilitator just talks way too much. And actually, the facilitator doesn't understand the technology. We've all been on the sessions where someone's muted. We get that. That's still a thing. But when, you know, the only interaction you get is, can you see my screen? Can you see this slide? You know, this is why people are saying, we don't like it. We feel tired. We can't concentrate. But when they get what they want, i.e. a great facilitator, when they have the opportunity to interact, and opportunity is an important point. It's not saying, oh, well, I want to interact and have to every single time. Just like we've got nearly 90 people here. There aren't 90 people continuously typing in the chat, which is a good thing. I wouldn't keep up with it. But you've got the opportunity to say something, to comment and to ask when you want to. The sessions have to be designed for virtual. So when you've got those kind of things going on, that's when you get the good sessions. But of course, it means as professionals, well, we need time to learn what best practice is. And in other parts of the research, we found that while some people are saying, yeah, there's some good practice, other people are saying we don't get tracked against good practice. So if we don't have the tech skills and the time and the investment in us, well, we're not going to be able to deliver the good sessions. And I think the challenge is from an organization point of view, how do you do that? How do you justify that? And that goes into those much bigger conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that particular conversation about the training departments being prepared to support the need, I think that shows up in a lot of other different reports too out in the industry. And it's interesting to see that reflected here as well.
Absolutely. I love some of the comments in the chat as well, where John Kissinger is saying, yep, VILT definitely breeds fatigue if not designed and facilitated for maximum engagement and value. And that's why I love what I do, John, as you well know, because I love when people at the end of the sessions go, wow, I didn't realize 2 hours went past so quickly. Wow, I haven't looked at my email once. It's like, there you go, you can do it. And also Kevin makes a really great point that all those well-being issues I shared, you can see them being more challenging in larger groups. And that's why the small groups are so important. So that's a great point, Kevin. Thank you.
Yeah. I think of even just, going back to university experience, you get the small group with the TA, of 10 or 20 people maybe in a room. Well, you can ask questions, you can, but the main lecture is 500 people in the hall. Well, all the lecturer is really going to be able to do is talk to you, maybe answer a couple of questions along the way. And similarly, if your instructor led is moving on to a virtual platform, but all you do is talk at people, well, record it as a video and then at least people can pause when they need a bio break or whatever.
Absolutely. And then you can use an authoring tool to chop it up and do things with it. And then you can use clips of it as part of your blended learning program. So there's all this available to us, But it comes back to that point of organizations, whether that's corporate, charity, or an academic organization, saying, we are going to invest in you. We are going to give you the time to learn these things and give you access to the right tools for the job. You know, I can go and edit something on Microsoft Video Editor, whatever it was, and I've done that. But I soon wanted to upgrade to Camtasia or something else.
Thinking about Gail's mentioning, what's strange is that organizations understand this concept in face-to-face, but not in virtual. And I think there's often the convenience, the budget, the get her done aspect, you know, oh, well, let's put 500 people in this session, and then it's done, it's out of the way, it's finished, it's complete. But whether we're doing this face-to-face or we're doing something virtual or we're even just doing an asynchronous e-learning, you really still have to come back to the standard value adds or the standard purpose of what we have to do, which is to teach people to be able to do something, not simply tell them things, right? That involves things like, reflection and practice and application goals, those sorts of critical things, rather than simply the attend this webinar and keep your camera on so we know you're watching the screen the whole time.
Oh, God, no, don't say that. You're right. And these are kind of some of the challenges we have. Did I have this just now? Let me go and see if I can find a bit of information. But one of the things that we have as professionals is when we never intended to be a virtual trainer. So, you know, then COVID came along and made everyone a virtual trainer in the entire world. And the trouble is that people weren't ready for that. They didn't want to. They thought it was this complete new skill set. They thought they'd lose touch with people. And if you do it wrong, then yeah, it can feel that way. And the bottom right-hand corner of this challenge for professionals, one of this is attendees being disinclined to keep their cameras on. So I'd really like to know kind of in the chat, how many of you either delivering training or attending meetings or whatever kind of your work might be, how many of you find that people are disinclined to keep their cameras on? So how many of you or people you attend with kind of go, nope, no camera from me? It'd just be interesting to get that that sense in the chat. But there are all sorts of reasons for it. It could be bandwidth, could be personal, could be I like to look out the window and think and I can't do that on camera. Or you've invited me to a meeting that is going to be of no use to me whatsoever and no benefit to me attending. So I want to get through my email instead. And the same applies to learning. So it depends on the type of meeting, maybe 50-50. If they do, they aren't paying attention, 50-50. Interesting, Gail says, just ran a session this morning, 3 women on webcam, 2 men camera off. You know, it's a tiny sample, but it's an interesting story, isn't it? And JB says 92% of 1,600 learners found seeing another person helps them make a human connection. And there's all sorts of research on that. What Mike will do is on our community, we've got a webcam kind of research kind of thread there. And he'll go and share the link to that. So there's loads of research to say, yes, do it. And there's loads of research about video in kind of e-learning that you can apply. But there's also research that says it's fatiguing and we have to look at ourselves on camera and all of that stuff. So it's just finding that balance.
Most of my sessions when I'm using a virtual tool are relatively smaller groups, you know, in the 10, sometimes occasionally up to 20. And my preference is to just tell people, you know, leave it on if you want, no need to have it on. I do often have to do sessions from my home where bandwidth is poor. So I typically in those don't even run my own video except for, you know, saying, you know, introducing my face at the beginning of the session, or, you know, time together, et cetera. But then again, those are long sessions where we're teaching, you know, people say for, you know, a 3 or 4 hour, you know, block, obviously breaks and all that stuff. But, you know, trying to have someone hold their facial expression and not scratch their nose, you know, we're human. Just turn your video camera off and you're adults. I trust you. You know, if you're here because you're learning something, I trust you. That's part of, I feel it's the, the contract I make is that you're adults, you're in charge of your own learning. I'm here to guide you through all of this, et cetera. But if you know, hey, if that email comes with that exclamation mark and it's from your boss, I'm not going to tell you, no, can you turn your camera on?
Like, I am not more important than the boss.
No, exactly. So I think too often there's this presumption that If these folks were in a room with me, they'd still be picking up their phone and checking their emails. They'd still have other things going on. You know, if we were all live in the same room doing this stuff too, why should that change, you know, in a virtual environment?
And it's really interesting. Mike's just sharing in the chat. We ran a session this week where people are starting to actually have anxiety when they can't have their webcam. So we had a lady who was using her mobile phone as a hotspot because she was having internet trouble. And so if she came on webcam, we just couldn't hear her audio at all. And she was saying, I'm still here, I'm paying attention, I promise, I feel so bad. And we're talking about webcams. And we're like, we're cool, we're fine, don't worry. Because guess what? There's this thing called digital body language. And you're answering things in chat and you're adding stuff on the whiteboard and you're clicking the hand up, clicking the green check mark. And, you know, I am not worried about you not being here. And to your point, Chris, if you're not here, I trust you need to be somewhere else. And that's
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Joe, in that the design of the engagement should encourage the engagement. We shouldn't have gimmicks and be forcing people to, you know, hey, we don't trust you or however we refer to it, right? You got to have your camera on because we want to make sure you're engaged. Instead, why don't we look at it as an opportunity and say we should be redesigning our training and our courses so that we are constantly allowing those attendees to engage with us in digital ways, to your point, right? Like with the whiteboard, the clicking, the raising the hand, the typing in the chat like we do here. I got to say, you know, but one of the things I absolutely love about Crowdcast and doing these live streams and doing Idiotic is the chat room. You folks hanging out with us and, you know, letting it be all of us, a community, to me that's the best part about this. You know, having guests is fantastic, but if it was just the three of us, you know, it might get kind of old after a while. It's fun to get
speak for yourself, Brent.
Well, okay. Maybe I put that the wrong way. You know, I love the variety. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Is the problem when we are just presenting in a webinar or a lecture or something, and there are spaces and times where that's appropriate and really good, and they can be great. But one of the problems it generates is, we don't have anything to bounce off of. We don't have anything where I can kind of, like John saying, let's hear it for the chat room. Whoop, whoop. You know, there's nothing for me to respond to if there's nothing there that people are doing, if there's no feedback. Right. And then if we're talking about this from a learning point of view, you know, if I'm asking you a question, what does 2 + 2 mean? And everybody types 5 in the chat. It's like, huh. I need to go over some basic stuff with you. And there's that learning feedback as well. So, Jeff, I'm not saying woot. That is not me. But it's really important that we have that interaction. I think the instructional design point of view is really important because good learning design is good learning design. It doesn't matter whether it's e-learning, whether it's video, whether it's virtual, whether it's face-to-face or not. But each of those things needs their specialism. I am not an e-learning designer. I've done it. I can do it, but that doesn't make me good at it. That doesn't make me understand the nuances of how people learn that way. So just like, you know, you can be a great trainer, you can be a great virtual trainer, but you've got to learn those new things to help you. And that's where a report like this comes in, is it's saying, hey, look, learners are saying this. And professionals are saying, we've got challenges with this. So we're trying to say to organizations, maybe you need to think about this. Because it's not just about making sure L&D are happy or making sure your staff are okay. It's making sure they can do their job so that your business succeeds and that your clients are happy in whatever fashion that takes for your organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. JB had a reference in the chat a little bit ago about, you know, having the webcam on. If it's just presentism, then it's not an effective tool. And Gail's comment earlier in the chat as well about having WhatsApp situated on her monitor. People are going to game it anyway, right? Everybody's playing, video games maybe right below their webcam. So it looks like they're looking at the screen. You know, you have to be prepared to treat people like adults first off. Which is sort of a strange thing to say maybe, but sometimes we need to be reminded of that.
Anne makes a great point too. A helper is nice. We like to call that helper the producer.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, we were teaching this just this week. It's amazing that I've got Mike. He is on 99% of my sessions, and don't tell him, but to be honest, I find him invaluable now. Even though for 5 years I ran Lightbulb Moment without him. Fine.
And it could happen again. Just keep that in mind.
Just you beware. But the point being, is you can do it without that second person. And most of us probably have to do it without that second person. Mm-hmm. So then it's looking at the techniques that we use. And that's probably a bit too much detail for today. But just one really good example is I can be the one to decide and communicate to you how that will work. So, for example, today I could have said, I am not paying attention to chat, moving too quickly, I can't cope with it. But if you have a question you want me to answer, guess what? There's a question section at the bottom and I will look at that. So that's just one example of us taking control of the platform and what we're doing and not letting it control us.
For sure. Let's circle back to the research study again. What else did you find as part of the survey that you guys were doing?
All sorts of stuff. So I think one of the things that probably is going to be kind of interesting for people, as it's a relatively new kind of area, is this hybrid perspective. And of course, you can let us know in the chat or you can ask a question if you're thinking, you've got particular experiences or feelings or questions about this. And I think that's a kind of a really important area to look at because it is new for a lot of people. So we asked people kind of what type of sessions they were offering. Huge amount of webinars and classrooms, a few conferences, some coaching assessments, and hybrid was kind of way down towards the bottom. So a really low percentage of people doing this, which is kind of interesting in itself. We also asked kind of what are the kind of differences that learning professionals are experiencing when we compare it to virtual classrooms. And I think understanding what it is and how it's different is really important. And we've probably all experienced this in different ways where management go, oh, let's do this new shiny thing I learned about at a conference at DevLearn this week or whatever it might be without really understanding it. I remember working on 70-20-10 stuff with Charles Jennings and it was just like, right, let's do 70-20-10. It's just like, let's pay for someone expensive with a big name and go and do the latest, greatest thing. And not necessarily letting Charles free to do the amazing work that he can. So I think when people don't understand even what virtual is, let alone what hybrid is, we have to think about that. Another great point in the middle here is about the quality before you get to hybrid. So if your virtual quality isn't great, quite frankly, your hybrid quality is not going to be either, because hybrid is a subset of virtual. And as it says here at the bottom, well, you need to be great virtual trainers before you can tackle hybrid. So last year, I co-designed and co-hosted the Speaks Exchange conference, and that was a hybrid conference. We're doing it again this year. It's later this month. And it takes a lot of tech. It takes a lot of planning. It takes an in-person facilitator and an online facilitator, which is me. And I think the trouble is people don't realize just how expensive that is and how challenging that is. And then if we broaden that out a bit, so this is looking at virtual and hybrid, there's a real disparity here between the answers that we've got where people are saying that they feel capable of designing and delivering virtual and hybrid versus feeling confident. And, we could go into a lot of detail here. One example, one way we could take this is, well, I feel capable of the stuff I can do. I feel confident in the stuff that I can do, the kind of beginner, intermediate maybe, but I actually don't feel capable of a lot of other stuff. But the other way we could look at this is the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is unconscious incompetence, if I think I've got that right. That's a tricky one for me to say this afternoon. So I think there are some interesting challenges here, and I'm waiting to see if there's anything I should have picked up from the chat from you guys.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. And one thing I was just going to ask that we kind of just define what is hybrid. I think hybrid means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So how did you define it when going about the research?
Okay, so it's a petrol engine and batteries. No, sorry.
Exactly.
this is the trouble. We've got hybrid cars. We've got hybrid working. I saw the term the other day, hybrid war, with regards to what's going on with Russia and Ukraine.
Oh.
And I was just like, what is this? Because they were talking about it's social, it's political, it's economic. And I just thought that was war generally, but maybe I don't know. So this word hybrid is kind of really challenging. Yeah. The way I look at this for learning is if we start with blended learning usually means a really good mix of let's do some e-learning, let's do something face-to-face, let's do some virtual stuff, let's have some coaching, and picking the right modalities for the learning journey that people are on. Okay. So that is one thing. And a lot of people are using the term hybrid training or learning to define what I call blended. And what that term has been around for as long as I can remember. So the hybrid is when you have some people virtual, like we are today. We're all, you know, Canada, America, UK, all around the world. And also when you have some people together. So that could be 5, 10, 50 people in one room, or it could be more than one location. So traditionally it might be, right, we've got people in the Berlin office and we've got 20 people online around the world. That is a hybrid live synchronous session.
So the fact that in your definition, what is different than the blended is that it's synchronous. It's everybody's doing it at the same time. They're just using different modalities to access the same thing, versus a blended structure, which takes you through different modalities for different potential content areas, etc., as part of a pathway. Then, cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's good to know, because I have kind of always how you defined blended learning is how I've often thought of hybrid learning. And when people mention the phrase, that it's a mix of e-learning in classroom, micro learning, you know, stuff before the classroom, the actual activities and things in the classroom, and then some post event, you know, slow drip learning or reminders, all that kind of whatever terms we want to use for it, right? That's kind of how I always thought it, but I'm gonna have to rethink that now. I like how you guys do that.
Well, the reason I think it's separate is for that point that it's the synchronous bit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't think blended learning is synchronous. Like you say, it's about the journey, and that could be a week, it could be 6 weeks, it could be a year. It could be self-directed learning. What I decide to do one day is read a book, watch a video, whatever. Or it could be the program that's designed and put on offer from the organization. So I think that's why it's important to use that term blended, and not in the term of, you know, oh, that rubbish blended learning, I've got to do an e-learning course. It's just like, no, that's just bad e-learning. You know, it's about using these terms kind of properly and designing and delivering them really well so they don't get that poor reputation.
Got it.
And Jennifer in chat has put hybrid session versus hybrid learning. So I think a hybrid, maybe you're picking up on my language, Jennifer. I'm not sure if what exactly that question is. But by session, I mean a learning session, a training session, a learning intervention. But also, you know, we can have hybrid work, which is not synchronous necessarily, although some people might be at home, some people might be in the office. And we can have hybrid meetings, which are synchronous. So it's a real challenge how we look at this. But either way, it's about some people being together and some people being live online. That's kind of the basics.
It's a great simple way to look at it. There's an interesting question in the question box that I wanted to make sure we got to today. And there's no name next to it, so I'm just going to ask the question. What right do we have to insist people connect on our terms? Surely we're the ones who should be respecting the people engaging with us. I found that to be kind of interesting. And for a lot of different reasons. What do you think?
I love that. Absolutely love that. Whoever wrote that, user 021973, blah, whatever you are. And I think there's a couple of ways that we can look at this. So maybe this came off the back of the webcam conversation, is where I'm assuming this came from. And we absolutely should be respecting people that are engaging with us. So, for example, when Chris was talking about, you know, your adult learners, if you need to answer that email from your boss, you go ahead. You know, we're respecting where people are in their life, in their work, where they are physically. And the other way to look at this as well, and the reason that I talk so much about interaction and all of this stuff, is that we should be honoring the lifetime people are with us. All of you guys today, nearly 100 of you, are, I hope, investing, but at least spending an hour here in live online with me, with Chris, with Brent. And we've got to respect that and make the most of it for you. So the other way of looking at this, though, about insisting people connect on our terms, is there is a certain level of, you know, we are the organization that employs you, or we are the organization that's asked you to attend this training to develop your skills to use in our business. Or in my case, I'm a vendor and I'm a specialist. So there's an element of, you might not want to do it this way as a learner, but I'm going to ask you to trust me that this is the best thing and the best way for you to learn. So on our learning, it's not really a management system, but on our kind of course hub, as we call it, where we've got all our resources and everything, one of the first things we ask people to read is about active learning. And there's a link to a bit of research and whatnot. And it basically says, we're going to make you do stuff, and we're going to ask you to reflect, and we're going to get you involved, and you might not want to, but you'll learn stuff, and it's the best way for you to do it. And that's what we're kind of saying there. Because therefore you need to meet me on my terms to a certain degree, but it's how you get those and weave those together that is the art and the science of what we do. But great question.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, it was Andrew who asked the question. I knew it was from someone clever, Andrew.
Yeah, the blended hybrid thing, I think I mentioned in a tweet or commenting on LinkedIn, was seems to be a pretty hot topic at DevLearn this year. So I was I'm glad we had a chance to have this conversation about that for sure. From a well, yeah, jump into the slides. Here we go.
Well, no, go ahead, because my slides might answer your question.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking maybe in the remaining few minutes of our conversation today, we maybe do talk about some of the technical stuff, dive a little deep, or maybe, a quick hit tips, or, you know, what's your, you know, how do you use the tools that you have, that kind of thing.
Okay, so let me run through a couple of quick things on the recommendations. I see Jeff's question as well, and I will answer that. Because I wanted to share one thing in particular, which is we've got in the report a journey map, a kind of stepped process you can go through, whatever it might be. And whilst this isn't answering kind of the deep technical questions, I think the point here is it allows organizations and individuals and teams as well to look at, where am I? Where are we at stage one, stage two? How do we move on from this? What management communication do we need? And what do we need to do? And things like at the bottom here of the green, of this blue section, let me go back. It says exploit stable technology and use add-on apps. Well, if you haven't got access to the technology, if you haven't got a senior management people talking to IT so that L&D and IT can talk together, well, you know, none of that stuff is going to work. So I think that kind of thing is really important to go and share. So that's why I wanted to kind of quickly jump to that one. In terms of the technology, Jeff, you're right about making it scalable for a hybrid technology. So a lot of it depends on your budget. It depends on how much and how often this is likely to be the case in your organization. And it will also depend on the skills of the people involved. And the people involved is not just the trainer. It's not just I am designing my session and then I'm going to run my session, whether it's face-to-face or virtual. It can be, but it probably shouldn't. It should be involving people in the physical location, which might be where the trainer is. It might involve people in the remote location. So, for example, you might have 10 people in the Sydney office together, as opposed to everybody in Australia at their own computer. So we have to think about lots of different ways that this might work. And the key things we have to think about is that everyone, so that's virtual attendees, physical attendees, which could be more than one location, and the facilitator and any support staff, all need to be able to see, hear, and do the same things. So this means what cameras, what laptops, what audio connections, how are we going to have breakout rooms and sidebar conversations? How can we make sure that somebody interrupting can hear somebody else? How can a facilitator see all of the attendees? How can all of the attendees see all of the other attendees? I'm going to stop and take a breath. There's a lot to think about. So, you know, in terms of which tech, Jeff, I wish I could answer that for you and say you just need this, this, and this, and job done. But it depends whether you've got no budget or 30,000 euro budget and anything in between. But if you think about that see, hear, do, and every part of that puzzle needs to be able to do that together, that at least starts you in that right direction.
I love that.
Yep. See, hear, do. Let's make that a phrase. Let's make that a thing.
Yeah.
Do you have t-shirts with that on it?
I wish I did. I should. Do you know what I should do? I should get a mug.
There we go.
There you go. Unique Definitely idea. See, hear, do all the time. That's what we do. Right? But...
Well, see, hear, and do put in to the chat. I know Mike shared it once already, but a link to where folks can connect with you, but more particularly find the report in case they want to dig into it more. That's Mike's cue to start copy and pasting. I hear the music. And Joe, as always, it's lovely to see you on Idiotic with us. Thanks so much for being able to jump in and share this stuff with us. I think I'm looking forward to seeing what happens for next year's version or next year's iteration of this information to see, are we making progress? Are things getting better? Are people getting better at doing this thing?
And Chris, who brings us Idiotic today?
Oh, funny you should ask that, Brent. Idiotic is, of course, sponsored by Domino Learning Systems. We do some pretty cool things here ourselves in terms of e-learning authoring and more. And I'm just looking for the, there it is. The copy paste on my side. I was a little slow. There goes the paste. If you're interested in learning, there's a link in the chat that can help you find out more about Domino One. We'd love to also talk with you more.
Thank you, Joe, for hanging out.
Yeah, and thanks so much to the folks in the chat. This has been one of the best chatty sessions we've had in a while. So lots of good stuff going on there.
You guys are great. We love the chat room. Let's dance on out of here.
Yeah. Thanks, gang.
Oh, yeah, I love the special effects. Yeah, excellent, Joe. Adios, everybody.